Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Kevin.
I guess we're going to talk about Patreon a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion out there.
Now that we actually have, you know, some content going on over there, let's talk about Patreon. This, if you're listening to this right now, this is an ad for Patreon, which means you're listening to it on our free podcast. 100% free, will always be free, free all the time. And you're listening to that, so you know that. You didn't pay anything for this podcast. However, we have a supplemental... we have bonus content on a website called Patreon. Patreon.com/KevinTheStrange is where you can go to listen to bonus podcasts from not only Reading to Strangers, but from Watching with Strangers and Ranting at Strangers also. Our other podcasts on the Strangeville Podcast Network.
At certain levels, you also get full audiobooks.
Yeah.
Access to early, you know, written content as well.
Yes. And heavy discounts. My book... I Died in a Bed of Roses is coming out this month, and for everyone else, it's going to be $15 to pre-order that book, signed and shipped from me. For our patrons at the $5 and up level, that book is only going to be $10. You'll be able to get that book signed, personalized from me, and shipped. No shipping cost on your end. We'll have a link to buy that for $10 on our for our $5 and up patrons. So that's just another bonus you get.
So it's like getting the book and a bunch of free content for the same price as just the book.
Like Jeremy said, you get those you get the audiobooks up front before they air serialized on the podcast. We do about 20 to 25 minutes a week of a particular book, but as a $5 and up patron on Patreon.com, you get access to that full audiobook with no commercials, absolutely uncut, unedited, right there up front at the beginning of the month. So right now, you can listen to, if you sign up at the $5 level today, you get to read the entire, or I'm sorry, you get to listen to the entire audiobook of The Humans Under the Bed by Kevin Strange and McHumans by Kevin Strange, and that's over 3 hours of content right there at the $5 level, plus the discounts on the books, plus you get shout-outs at the end of every month for being a patron, and a bunch of other
cool
stuff.
All about value.
And we do that because that's the Patreon is how we fund the operation. We give you free podcasts that don't involve outside advertising. This is our advertising. If you donate even as little as $1 a month, you help us fund the operation, all right? So that's the difference between the free podcast and the Patreon. So we appreciate you listening to this ad. And you got anything to add there, Jeremy?
Just go to patreon.com/KevinTheStrange if you're interested. Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For Reading to Strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. And then you'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. And then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Kevin Strange.
I'm Jeremy Daniels.
And we are back for another episode of Reading to Strangers. Now, we had planned, if you listened to last week's episode, or, you know, there's been a bunch of episodes. Yeah. I think we did 11 episodes of this show.
For the last 3 weeks or something.
In the month of January, I think we did 11 episodes of this show, and I have two other podcasts. Also, so I've been working really hard on these podcasts, bringing you special reports on the Bizarrogate scandal. And before the scandal broke, we had planned the month of February to be a Lovecraftian horror month. The audio book that we're presenting this month, McHumans, is a Lovecraftian bizarro story. And we wanted to kind of highlight that by addressing a bunch of current contemporary issues with the Lovecraftian community. But let me tell you, Jeremy Daniels, kind of a little tired of confronting literary communities right now, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, this week was also just a smaller part of the whole month of the Lovecraftian stuff with just him being banned from stuff. So we might cover it at the end if we have a little time.
Maybe we'll just do it next week. I kind of want to like steer the direction of this show kind of away from these controversies and more just towards highlighting these audiobooks. I mean, at this point, I don't know if anybody in our current audience is even listening to these audiobooks. They just want the drama of the literary community's stuff. They want to see me fight. I mean, I've even had fans, you know, express to me that they don't want to see this feud end. But you know, I'm not here to be the 2017 version of a shock jock. I will be. I'll wear that hat with pride when I have to, when the situations present themselves. But we didn't start this podcast, you and I, to be super controversial figures and start fights and have feuds with authors and literary communities. I mean,
it's supposed to be something like the reading to monsters was a couple years ago.
And you encouraged me way back then. Your favorite author is a guy named Scott Sigler, who sort of made his career off of recording audiobooks and presenting them in a serialized fashion for free on his podcast.
Yeah.
And you sort of encouraged us to take that direction back with Reading to Monsters. And that was always my goal with that podcast. And when I contacted you to be my co-host of this show, it's because I've never forgotten that, you know, I'd always felt like there was a void in my writing career because I wasn't continuously putting out audiobooks as serialized podcasts. Like, that was always a thing I knew I needed to get back to. And when I contacted you near the end of last year, it wasn't to be these shock jocks.
No, this whole situation kind of blew up in the process of us starting this.
If you listen through the show from beginning to end, you know, in episode zero, I do say that I'm a voice that isn't afraid to call the bizarro and horror communities out when I need to. And again, I'll wear that hat with pride when it's necessary. But
we don't mind ringing the bell. We just don't want to ring the bell as the whole deal. This isn't designed to be us blowing whistles, so to speak, all the time.
Yeah, this isn't like a whistleblowing podcast or a feud.
We're not Alex Jones.
That's not what it's meant to be. But again, I'll wear that hat with pride when I have to. So, with that in mind, I want to kind of pull back a little bit. I don't know, maybe. It's just this whole thing with Bizarro Gate, it came out of nowhere. Like, this information fell into our laps and became this huge thing. And, you know, you guys only heard about it last week, but we've been sitting on this thing for a month trying to figure out what to do with it, what the consequences were going to be if we did bring it to light. How it was going to affect the community, how it was going to affect us, what kind of blowback there was going to be on us for whistleblowing this issue. And as I've stated over and over again, whether you guys like it or not, I don't want to kill Bizarro Fiction. I want to see Bizarro Fiction legitimized. And
grow. That's the only way it's going to grow is if it has.
What a lot of people who are just sycophants and hangers-on and worshippers of Eraserhead Press don't realize is Bizarro is not a legitimate genre. You can't go on Amazon.com and search the Bizarro section. You can't go to a library and search the Bizarro section. You can't go to bookstores, most bookstores, and ask them where the Bizarro Fiction section is. But that's the goal. That's the goal of this entire experiment. This thing's been going on for 15 years, and it hasn't died yet. And it fought hard. People ridiculed Carlton Mellick and Rose O'Keefe when they decided to make a whole new genre of fiction. And they were ridiculed because people at the time told them, you're only doing this because you failed to find success in the other established genres of fiction. And so you're just a bunch of losers. And this isn't real. This isn't a real thing. And a lot of the authors over the years that have had problems with the way they do business up there in Portland, they have used that as a tactic of to sort of smear those guys and say, well, you know, Bizarro's been around forever, but there's been a bunch of different names. What makes you think you have the, what makes you think you get to decide what weird fiction is? And, you know, I've never been that guy. I've understood from the moment I was introduced to Bizarro Fiction what the real overarching goals of this whole thing was, and that's to create a legitimate new brand of a new genre of cult fiction, so that people, you know, writers like me, have a defined genre, as Brian Keene said on his podcast this week. The word bizarro is for fans. It's to catalog and categorize a type of fiction that fans enjoy reading. It's an ease of use for readers. And a lot of people use it as a trendy badge for their hipster subculture. They believe that, you know, well, you wouldn't know what my type of fiction is. You've probably never heard of bizarro. And those kind of people never want it to grow. Those kind of people never want it to get away from a handful of people. They just want to be one of those people. They want to be one of the unique hipsters who possesses the label of bizarro. And that's truly selfish. That's the truly selfish thing. And unfortunately, Portland has a lot of sycophants and hangers-on that have that attitude, including a lot of their editors, including a lot of the gatekeepers, their editors, that they don't want there to be. You know, there was explosive growth in this genre in 2008, 2009, 2010, but once these other guys sort of got on board around 2012, 13, 14, the amount of new voices that you legitimately hear from the bizarro fiction genre, like successful voices that penetrate the sycophants who buy the books just to gain favor, because they consider themselves writers, and they buy the books just to gain favor with Portland. Most of the new names that have come out in the last 5 years have never even penetrated that. Most people don't know who they are. And, you know, Portland has its own, like, new author series called the New Bizarro Author Series, but 99% of those authors never write another book. They write a 20,000 word novelette, and it comes and goes, and you never hear from those people again. And again, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of these people consider bizarro to just be a hobby, like I said, just a hipster hobby.
Well, they also don't seem to be focusing on the craft. We've talked about this at length.
It's just a trend. It's like a gossip circle.
Yeah, I mean, they don't sit there and actually do stuff like, I'll use you as an example. They've never went to a hotel and tried to write a book.
Right.
Over a weekend or...
From September 2016 to March 2017, in this six-month period, I think that's 5 months, whatever, in that period, I had a book released in September 2016. My new book just went off to the editor this week, and I have a follow-up novel that's coming out next month, and that, all told, is 110,000 words of new fiction in 6 months. And if I keep up that pace, that's 220,000 words of fiction in a 12-month period.
Yeah, that's how you get good at your craft. You actually practice, just like anybody else, and create.
There are, I would say, influential people in this community who don't even have 75,000 words published, and they think that their opinion holds more weight than mine, and it does with a lot of people. That their opinion does hold weight in the bizarro community more than mine, because they're better sycophants, because they toe the Portland line better than I do. And so you look at this from the outside looking in and go, well, it's just a knitting circle. And the end goal isn't to be a professional writer or a professional knitter in the case of a knitting circle. When you're in a knitting circle as a hobby, your end goal is to have the person who puts on the Afghan show at the end of the month. Your end goal is for the leader of the Afghan club to display your work. You don't get paid for it. It's just the honor and prestige that comes among your small group of peers that you were acknowledged by the leadership. For bizarro fiction, where we're at right now, the end goal of these sycophants and these hangers-on is to get a book published through Portland, not because it's going to make them any money, but because they get acknowledged by the leadership.
Which it should be... acknowledged by your fans, because whether the leadership likes
it or not.
There
are no fans for these people. No one's buying the books.
Well, that's what I'm saying is they should be writing to try to touch an audience that they might actually gather fans from, but it doesn't seem like that's what they're doing.
And so this whole business of Bizarro Gate was never intended to hurt Bizarro Fiction. Its intention is to help us get past the knitting circle phase of this genre and get us to a point where we are a legitimate genre in libraries and bookstores and online stores. Like, there's one of the big social media platforms for writers is a website called Goodreads. And you you know, you can add your books. Fans can easily rate your books and review your books, and your standing as an author. You know, you have an average rating score and all this different stuff. It's a very, very intuitive social media platform for writers. Great place to be to push your writing career forward. No bizarro fiction genre, right? You're either categorized as horror, science fiction, romance, young adult, but no bizarro.
Yeah, but that's because, like, even the bizarro writing group isn't a nationwide thing. I mean, you're never going to get a classified genre with, like, Goodreads and stuff like that if you don't have a solid body that is going to actually promote the brand, not their specific brand, but the brand of, or the genre of, bizarro fiction.
Right.
Horror didn't have their own section until people gathered together to do that.
It was all lumped into science fiction.
Fiction, fantasy. Nonfiction. I mean, you know, all these genres have been developed by these groups, and that's what the groups are supposed to do, not push a certain publisher or push a certain, you know, area of the country, but push the whole genre. And you're not going to get that if you have it in one specific town. It's not, a knitting circle's not going to do that. Brian Keene talked about this, that, you know, all these different spots of bizarro. Well, the only way they're going to be able to rise up from their little, you know, knitting circles is to join together and push it as a legitimate genre.
So. Yeah, let's go ahead and get into that, because people have been blowing up the website in the last 48 hours to see what our response is going to be to Brian Keene's new podcast, because he was very much spoke to me directly.
Yeah.
The podcast, and it was very much a reaction to our Bizarro Gate breaking news from the week before. Now, I've had a lot of time to think about this, how we're going to respond. You and I talked about this off air at length. You know, there's been so much mud slung in our direction, at me specifically, from the Bizarro community, or mainly the sycophants that don't have 75,000 words of fiction published in their entire lives. They get vicious online, and they can't hurt me with words. I'm not saying that I've been hurt. You know, you can't. It's the schoolyard insults are not gonna do a thing to me.
And we're different generations. Sticks and stones that hurt broke our bones. Words weren't supposed to hurt us.
Yeah,
that's the way we were raised.
And I've been warning them that this whole time that schoolyard insults weren't going to have any effect on me. But at the same time, it's like human nature that when I've been ridiculed and viciously verbally attacked over the last few months, and the last few years, to be quite honest with you, there's a concerted attack on my reputation that's coming out of the alleged airplane perpetrator's old publishing house that he edited for, that has been,
you know, but insiders know why that's happening.
So anyway, it's human nature to then want to gloat about our victory, right? It's human nature to say, I fucking told you so. It's human nature to say, you fucking sycophants, get off the tit of Portland and think for yourselves for half a fucking second and think about the future of this genre, not just your own ass. But I don't want to antagonize this. I don't want to keep this going on. Again, I have listeners who very much want to see this go on, who want to see us attack and gloat at Brian and at Portland and antagonize them to then attack us back. And I understand that that makes good radio. I understand that makes compelling radio. And I understand that this is maybe the most exciting thing that's ever happened in Bizarro Fiction. But I don't care to do that. I didn't get into writing all those years ago to be a to fight with other writers.
And besides, we need to get back to promoting your brand. Right. Now, everybody liked to, you know, throw mud that we were just doing this to promote your brand. Well, we're doing this podcast to promote your brand, but this isn't what we don't want to have to call people out on their hypocrisy. That's not how we want to promote. We want to talk about why you wrote the stories.
Yeah.
Let you listen to the stories, and
that's a poisonous way to try to promote a brand is by antagonizing other brands. You know, I've always told one of my best friends owns a tattoo shop, and when he was getting started, one of the best pieces of advice I gave him. Was don't trash the other tattoo parlors. It makes you look bad. It reduces your brand to try to trash other people's brands and drag them below you. And as we've said on this show many, many times, our goal is to raise the tide, because the tide will raise all the ships in the harbor, not just ours. And you know, trying to get Bizarro past this.
Let your work speak for yourself.
Yeah, and the whole reason we've been doing this is just to try to get Bizarro past this gossipy, public shaming. If you do something wrong, we can throw you out, and it doesn't matter why.
Well, that's what's crazy. We're pointing out that we're tired of the witch hunts, and you know, don't want the witch hunts, and then showed hypocrisy, how the witch hunts are directed, and the first thing they yelled was, "There's a witch!" We were talking about this off the air.
Yeah. Well, and we knew that was going to happen. Was as soon as we pointed out that the witch hunting is selective, and that the I've raged on this show. I've yelled on this show that social justice warriors don't care about women; they care about their agenda. And the very first opportunity that we got, which was 3 weeks later, we had a situation dropped into our lap where we could easily prove, very, very easily prove, that this community, the social justice wing of the Bizarro community, doesn't care about women. It cares about its agenda. It cares about saving its own ass. It cares about how it looks to the outside world more than it cares about women. And I've been saying that the entire time. And so, yeah, the community right now, the Bizarro community, is split into two. It's split into the, he's our friend, so therefore we have to believe him, hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And then the other side, which is, it's a witch, burn him! and neither side is good. Like, it's all we wanted to do with Bizarro Gate was prove that that all of this witch hunting is illegitimate. And they're coming after these people who are just writing fiction, and they're writing, a lot of this is perverted fiction. A lot of this is very, very hypersexualized fiction. To then say that the people who write that fiction, who have sexual criminal backgrounds, don't deserve to be able to write it, is like, We talked about that slippery slope. What about violent criminals? What about thieves? What about fraud artists? Like, at what point, like, do you have to do a background check to be? Do you have to pass a background check to be a part of Bizarro Fiction? Who do I write the check out to check my background? You know what I mean? Like, where does that end?
We were also just wanting a standard, a community standard, because that's what these associations are supposed to do, are to develop a standard so we don't have to talk about this shit.
We don't have
to cross that line, you're gone.
But Bizarro doesn't have a real writers association.
Oh yeah, we've talked about that.
It's got a writers association in name only. It's got a ceremonial writers association.
It's not democratically elected.
It's not democratically elected, and it doesn't do anything.
I mean, I belong to associations. We have different central location where we all come together, but we have different chapters in different parts of the country that have equal pull in the actual association. And I'm sure the Horror Writers Association and all the other major associations are like that. It's a real common, you know, blueprint, but this doesn't seem to have it.
Well, everything in Bizarro is ceremonial. There's a ceremonial Writers Association. It's a ceremonial award that's given out, which you guys will see. You guys will see the nature of that here coming up in a few months, when the Wonderland Award for Excellence in Bizarro Fiction that's handed out by Portland, when the preliminary ballot is announced online, you'll very plainly see that my new book from last year, from 2016, All the Toxic Waste from My Heart, will be absent from the list, because I've been excommunicated from the Bizarro community at large. And as Brian Keene so plainly put, like, gatekeepers don't get to decide that anymore. I can call myself Bizarro for the rest of my life, but there's only one association right now that gives out an award for excellence in Bizarro Fiction. And again, awards aren't designed to stroke egos. Awards are designed, again, to show readers the best of the best, by as voted on by the peers and the fans themselves. are supposed to have an opportunity to vote for that award, but it's a ceremonial. It's a ceremonial vote. Like, there, you have the ability to email Portland and tell them which book that you are voting for from the preliminary ballot. But and, you know, I've been told from multiple sources for years and years and years that it's totally ceremonial. It's not a merited award. The award isn't given out based on who gets the most votes from the fans and their peers, their fellow writers, but who is most going to represent the brand of Portland's Bizarro.
Yeah, we saw that a couple of years ago when we were working together at the former publishing house that you owned. I know that there was at least a couple hundred people that sent your name in. I mean,
yeah, that first year that, and we can get into all this later on. Again, this isn't something that I wanted to focus on this particular broadcast. This is trying to de-escalate things, not bring up new points. But when I was first added to that list with my debut book, Robomb Apocalypse, we clearly got a shit ton of votes, and a lot of that had to do with our own hangers-on and sycophants,
yeah.
who they thought that if they voted for me, that would secure their place to get a book deal with our publishing house. And that's one of the reasons why I sold the publishing house off, was because people were so fucking phony, and they would kiss my ass and suck up to me just for the opportunity to get published. And that's not why I didn't start a publishing house to get sucked up to. And so I sold it off, and I was like, no, my personality, my brand, and my fiction are going to live or die based on merit, not based on what I can do for other people. And so that first year, since we did have a lot of hangers-on, a lot of sycophants, a lot of people that wanted to try to impress us to get book deals, we got a fucking shitload of votes, and that book didn't make it to the final ballot. And that's not me saying, it's no fair, Kevin didn't win. This, I'm telling you, from multiple sources.
Me, as your business manager, just assumed Bizarro was that big. And then after we get through that, and I actually, you know, was really deep in the research of how many people are into this type of fiction, at that time, there was no way. There was no way that you didn't. I mean, you didn't have to win. I didn't think that we should have been at least a finalist, because you look at the numbers. There was people that didn't give two shits and a fuck about fiction in general, that were just fans of your movies, that, you know, were, you know, saying they voted. I saw them, you know, put that they put in there. So we were drawing a bunch of other people outside. And it'd be fair if they said, well, this one didn't count, but it doesn't seem like there is a board that even rules on that. It seems like there was one person that was taken.
Yeah, or a couple. I don't know. It's hard to say how many of those guys actually get together and decide the honorary award, who's going to win it. But I can tell you this, and again, we'll get into specifics later on down the road if we decide to, but I can show you the year that any book outside of the Portland presses and their imprints ever was even put on the preliminary ballot. And that was the year my book, Robomb Apocalypse, was the first book outside of their imprints. And maybe Raw Dog Screaming Press was a part of that. And there was another press called Afterbirth Books, but those were all Portland-based. They were all part of the same little collective. And so their books had been on there. But no one from anywhere in the country that was publishing Bizarro fiction outside of their circle that had ever been put on the preliminary ballot until my book was put on there. And now it's fairly open now. Like, there's more Bizarro books that are on that preliminary ballot now than ever have been, from all over the world, from self-published authors that end up on there. But why
wouldn't they use, like, the wonders of the internet to do a fair and balanced voting system?
Because power begets power, and there's they don't. Here's the thing. Portland, while they have started to put outside Bizarro writers on the preliminary ballot, they have yet to give an award to anyone outside of their own publishing house. It's more of a
editor's choice.
Yeah, it's an editor's choice award, not a public award. Even though, and I think it's disingenuous because they lead the public to believe that it is an award based on merit.
Seen that way to me as an outsider, like, yeah, 2 years ago.
The public is made to believe that they have a say. It turns out to be an honorary award. This is all hearsay, by the way. This is all conjecture. These are all alleged, You know, these are all...
We don't have proof. We're not... We're, like we said, we're not wanting to whistle blow. We're just trying to wrap this up.
So in the end, the Wonderland Award ends up being an ad for whatever book and whatever author that they want to push and make money off of for the year, because it's... You can't say I don't want to make money. I'm not doing it to make money when the only books that have ever won the award are books that you make money off of. There's never, you know, it's, we're 10 years in now. This is the 2017 is the 10th year of the Wonderland Awards, and for 10, you know, for 9 years, Portland publisher based books have won this award. So, and again, you won't even see my the only proof you need about this is that my book won't show up on the ballot this year. And we'll get more into that as that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this again when that time comes, but we're just kind of throwing salt in the wounds, and that wasn't my intention. I really wanted to talk about Brian Keene's response podcast. That's what everybody tuned in for. They want to know what I have to say, what we have to say about Brian's revelation this week. We called on him to be fair and balanced. If he was going to attack the BizarroCon 2016 alleged stalker, that he needed to move on his information, that I had proof that he, you know, he had the information about BizarroGate, about the alleged airplane perpetrator, the author and editor with federal indictments against him. I had proof that he had that information as long as I did. And he did finally move on that. We called on him to be fair, to do the right thing, to be consistent with his own policies, to then talk about that case, even though it directly involves his friends, mm-hmm. and it directly involves his employer. And that couldn't have been an easy thing to do.
No.
But we absolutely applaud the Brian Keene, the horror show with Brian Keene, Brian and Dave for manning up and going ahead and covering that issue, which I know was sucky for them. It was super sucky for them. But they put themselves in this situation by wanting to talk about people's private lives. And Brian justifies that by saying that if it involves my community, and he serves to protect his community. He believes that he is a knight, you know, a white knight for the arbiter for the bizarro and horror communities. And if he wants to, and that's, you know, I don't agree with that. Brian and I have a huge ideological divide where I believe that these things can be handled privately, maturely, and be handled like adults without ever having to take this stuff public. You know, for the BizarroCon 2016 alleged stalker, all it would have taken was an email from the promoters of BizarroCon directly to him privately saying, "You are not welcome. Due to your behavior, you are no longer welcome to attend our convention." Why did any of that ever have to be public? He wouldn't have come back.
No.
He would have been like, "Fuck, okay."
I guarantee if anybody said something in the moment, with as awkward as I've been led to believe by multiple people on both sides of this issue that this guy is, if somebody would have just called him out right then and there, I know people like that. They generally wilt away. I mean, he may even have left early.
So, again, so Brian and I just have this ideological divide where I don't think that this stuff needs to be publicly, I don't think these people need to be publicly shamed. It makes all of us look bad. We all look like clown shoes right now. Everybody. Mm-hmm. You and me, Brian and Dave, the Bizarros in Portland, all the sycophants throwing mud at us for the last month, saying, "Well, if you have proof about something, Kevin Strange, why don't you just say it? Well, you gotta have specific examples. Provide specific examples." The moment I do, they go fucking silent. This week, there has been a deafening silence from the Bizarro community. Definitely. Fucking crickets. I've told you people from the start, I don't start fights I can't win. And the fights I want to have about Bizarro Fiction, the things I want to do to elevate Bizarro Fiction to the next level, have nothing to do with Bizarro Gate. That shit landed right in our laps. Yeah. Just landed in our laps. You think that's not going to happen again in 3 months?
Well, I mean, people are already willing to, you know, give us information to continue this battle, but that's just not what we want to do. So.
I'm just not that guy. And yes, I want Bizarro to prosper and go forward, but I don't want to sit and fight every week. This is not fun. I've been telling people privately, you know, that have been sending me emails, like, you guys got to understand, this isn't fun for me. I don't want to kill Bizarro Fiction. So Brian did that. He did. He addressed as...
totally shocked both of us. We thought he was going to just double down again and again.
Well, because he was really cruel to us.
Oh, yeah.
Really.
I was a little monkey. He was really trashing you a week before that.
A week before that, he was very disrespectful, called you a talking monkey, said he doesn't have time for... Yeah, says he doesn't have time for my bullshit. What else did he say? He said all kinds of really mean stuff, and it got us fired up. And I fired back at him some things that I probably shouldn't have said, because this dude, again, is one of my literary heroes. And he clearly, within the week, he either listened to my shows, someone clued him in as to how respectful we really had been being towards him. And that his sort of lashing out was uncalled for, because his tone was totally different with us this week.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah,
I don't
want
to fight with you, Brian. This isn't, I have no, you know, you said on your show the previous week that, you know, you're not the first genius to start a fight with Brian Keene. Well, I think I've laid out pretty convincingly on this show and on posts on my website that I didn't start it. I really didn't. You banned me from your show for saying I was protecting, stalkers and harassers, and that's just not true. And that's one of the first things that you talk about, that Brian talked about on this week's show. He sort of walked back these allegations that he witnessed harassment at the show, and that the BizarroCon 2016 alleged harasser and stalker was ejected from the show. It actually, no one has come forward to sort of correct me on this either. We've been going off of Brian, because Brian was there at BizarroCon 2016. So when he said that the alleged stalker was ejected from the show for unrelated reasons, I just went ahead and went with that. I wasn't going to argue that. But it turns out that wasn't even him. It was a different person for some different reason. If anybody has any information on that, I'm not necessarily going to say, I'm going to use it on the show, because again, I'm trying to de-escalate this.
Just for our morbid curiosity.
I just really want to know who got thrown out of BizarroCon and why. I'd really like to know that. If anybody has that information, please contact Jeremy over at facebook.com/readingtostrangers. Send him a private message. We'll keep your, if we do decide to talk about it, we will keep your identity completely anonymous. You have nothing to worry about as far as backlash from your community. We will protect your identity. So if you have that info, let us know. So Brian walked that back and said, sorry, that was bad information. But he also changed his statement on BizarroCon 2016. He said that he witnessed bizarre behavior from the alleged stalker, which then, after the show, escalated to stalking. I am perfectly fine with that statement.
Oh, yeah. Then,
for months now, I've just been trying to get that clarified. And it's silly that it takes yelling at each other and shouting over podcasts to get it done. But, you know, take note, listeners. Take note, fans. This is how alpha males behave, okay?
When we're too far to piss on each other's trees.
Right. We you know, we get mad, we yell and shout, we piss each other off, we show our hand, you know, how much power we have in this situation, and when it's all over with, I can shake Brian's hand easily.
Sure.
No problem. I didn't want to have to throw away all of his books. It's made me sad more than anything. It's made me sad that we've had this this little feud, and it certainly was nothing I did to sensationalize.
In fact, we discussed that, you know, the band, after being frustrated last
week. Yeah, we were just being facetious in the first place. He was never going to come on our show.
Yeah, I mean,
we just said he was banned from our show for not exposing Bizarro Gate.
Which, if that was a real band, if he was actually, like, in this area that we live in and wanted to be on our show,
Bans lifted. And Brian, if you could, say that on your show too. Just say that, you know, I'm not going to get out to Pennsylvania anytime soon. Yeah. I would ever be on your show again. If I did, it might be once annually or semi-annually. So if you could just tell people that I'm not banned from your show, because I think that was a low blow. And I'm not trying to protect anybody. I was trying to clarify. The author in question from BizarroCon 2016, he admitted in the blogs that he published that he was walking in circles in the front of the convention, and people were watching him, like, wondering what the fuck he was up to, like pacing circles and stuff. Yeah, this kid was weird, man, but it's a convention of weird people. It's a gathering of weird people. And I think, and it needs to be stated again, that while he sent a lot of Facebook messages to this girl, she took 7 days to tell him to stop. And when she did tell him to stop, he did. He apologized publicly, and he's never mentioned her name again. Amen. And if that's not enough for the community to calm down about this guy, I don't know what is, because they're calling him a harasser and a stalker. Again, you have to really contextualize what this means. It was Facebook messages. He didn't have her phone number. He didn't know where she lived. He wasn't stalking her friends. He was sending a lot of intense, really weird messages, but they weren't messages, like, they weren't disrespectful messages. He wasn't, you know, and Brian says there were hundreds of them. Well, you know, Brian, I know you can look at those messages and see that while they were intense and weird, and a lot of people might be scared by those, they weren't, like, sexual messages. They weren't, like, messages threatening violence or anything like that. And while I understand that she doesn't want to talk to the female author, doesn't want to speak to this guy, and that she thinks he's fucked up, let's just keep that in let's keep it in context. That in the scheme of things, this could have been a lot worse than it was. It didn't need to go public the way that it did. And it was misconstrued as something way more serious than it was. So when you say that I'm banned from the show because I'm protecting stalkers and harassers, come on, we're talking about a guy who sent a bunch of messages. He's clearly got mental issues, man. And I think that this community needs to really take a step back and look at how they treat people with mental illness. Because the way these messages read to me, and the way his behavior and his blogs read to me, is if he's not on the autism spectrum, then he probably has the beginning signs of schizophrenia. And instead of, like, banning me from podcasts for, like, trying to stick up for the kid, why don't we, as a, you know, collective community, start recognizing when we see mental illness and start trying to help get these people help? Start, you know, this guy could probably use a psychiatrist. He could probably use medication. He could probably use therapy. And instead of, you know, virtue signaling to feminism and white knighting this female author because she's one of the popular Portland bizarros, why don't we have a little respect here for human beings?
Or rally as a community, get $125 together and get him counseling, because if he would go to an initial counseling visit and he hadn't had any of those issues that we talked about, there's other money that he could have access to continue that treatment.
Right.
So,
okay. And so why as a community, why can't we go that direction? Why can't we be compassionate adults about these situations? So, you know, that's where I was coming from. That's the only thing. I wasn't trying to protect people, like gross people that were going out of their way being disrespectful to women or anything like that. And that's how it's been construed. It's been because I'm the bad guy, because I'm the only person in Bizarro that's willing to speak out and not toe the line and suck on the tit of Portland. It's like, man, this is, we're adults, and it goes a lot further than whether or not the knitting circle is going to display my quilt at the end of the month.
Yeah. Well, it's also our nature. I mean, even with the other the airplane perpetrator, we've been worried about him.
I really am worried about him.
There are rally behind him, or actually checking on his mental health and mental, you know.
Because now Brian has a much bigger platform than we do. He's now exposed him by name.
Yeah.
He's exposed the links to, and I'm not criticizing you, Brian. This is the way you want to do this. This is your, you know, we have an ideological divide, but I respect the fact that you did this because you do this with everyone. So you have been fair and balanced with your presentation of these issues. I don't agree with the way you do it. And one of the reasons I don't agree with it is now, you know, this guy is now having his name drug through the mud even more, at an even crazier level. Now the entire horror community at large, outside of Bizarro Fiction, knows his name, knows the web links to go to see all of the things he's been accused of. And while I'm not saying, a lot of people would say, well, if he did it, he deserves it, and he deserves to be drug out in the street and you know, executed.
Which there's a lot of truth to that, but we're people, and we are kind of people.
Well, we talked about
if he didn't, I want to make sure that there are enough people there to support him to make it through it.
We talked about last week about the women in this situation and how they must feel having gone through what they went through.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk a little bit about him. Let's talk about this author who now has had his entire identity. Everything this guy is writing bizarro fiction. His entire identity is now crushed. His best friends are now being accused of protecting him. He's a liability to the entire community. He's a radioactive bomb right now, and anybody who touches him is getting infected by this situation. And really, any of his friends that are listening to this, close friends, keep an eye on him. Make sure he's okay, because these are the kind of situations that can end really dramatically. And we don't want to see that. And I did not expose Bizarro Gate for this to happen. I didn't expose Bizarro Gate for this guy to have his entire identity crushed. I did it to show the hypocrisy in the community itself, and that the community needs to either live up to its own standards or change those standards and stop being, like I said, at the end of the day, if you keep pushing these standards, these moral standards as high as you do, then everybody involved in your community needs to pass a criminal background check before they're even allowed to call themselves Bizarro writers. So, you know, again, Brian, I applaud you for walking back the BizarroCon 2016 situation, and I applaud you for remaining balanced and fair in your reporting. But again, I urge you, please stop doing this. Handle this stuff privately.
And I just really wish one of the 11 times that he mentioned your name in his open letter to Bizarro, I just wish one of them was calling me by my name rather than Little Monkey.
Yeah, Jeremy's kind of butthurt that he didn't get a mention. And in
I did get a mention as Kevin Little Monkey. I didn't.
Not in the new one.
Yeah, not in the new one. Not in the
open letter to Bizarro Picture.
Yeah.
I also want to note that Brian has unblocked me from social media, but he seemed to forget my Little Monkey.
Yes, but you know, that's all right. I don't Twitter a lot. I mean, I mess around on it. I don't really fuck with it.
But I appreciate that. I don't know what that was about. I know you reacted in anger.
I mean, he seemed like he was just going to go back to being a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, from what you've told me before, he seemed that way. And this situation was, you know, clouding that, making me lose some respect. He actually gained a little bit back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think from both of us. And again,
and if I was not blocked by him and, you know, just only mentioned as Kevin's Little Monkey, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to, you know, 40 hours a week of podcast at work.
Well, he's got a great podcast, and he did mention, you know, he said despite the bad things Kevin Strange has said about me and Dave, and I just want to be clear, though that's a quote from the show, from Brian's last show, I want to be clear that I've never said anything bad about Dave. I think Dave is a great co-host. I think that he gets a lot of shit from Brian's audience. They don't like his presence on the show, and I've always went to bat for Dave and defended Dave, even to my friends who listen to the show and say that they don't like him on that show, that they think he's a weak link. I've always told him, no, you gotta let Dave be Dave. Dave grows on you. Dave's a great addition. If that was just Brian talking by himself every week, it would not be the same show. It would be boring. But Dave adds a lot more to that show than people give him credit for. And I'm very interested, Dave, if you're listening to this, Dave, I'm very interested to hear if you're going to go to the Iron Maiden Ghost concert this summer. They just announced a North American tour for Iron Maiden. Super excited about it. I haven't gotten my tickets yet, but I'm about to. And I hope that Dave goes to a lot of metal shows and he reviews them on the horror show. I hope that if you go to the Maiden show, you and Phoebe go to the Maiden show, I hope that you do a review of that on the podcast, because I want to hear what you think of Maiden's current set. Because they're apparently going to do a whole lot of tracks off of the Book of Souls new album that they just released, and I like that album a lot. So, I want to clarify that when I had bad things to say, I had bad things to say about the way Brian was handling Bizarro Gate, and I had bad things to say about the way. I was just to clarify that I haven't said bad things about your show. We reacted to your very, very mean comments about us on last week's show.
What's the time of this so far? Where
are we at? Almost an hour. 45 minutes. Almost an hour.
So now this has become a special episode rather than the...
No, I'm still going to throw McHumans on there. We're just not going to have very much at the end. We're going to end it with the...
Let's just end it with McHumans. We can end our stuff here and then...
Yeah, and then end with McHumans. I did have one more thing I wanted to go over about this, though.
All right.
About Brian's thing. I mean,
in the special 2 hour.
No, it'll be long, but they don't seem to mind the length of these shows. But I don't want to make it a special episode because we've had so many. 11 episodes in 4 weeks.
I know that, too, but...
But he didn't... One of the things Brian didn't mention was he didn't mention Bizarro Gate. He didn't say it by name. And he called basically without saying it by name, he called our theories conspiracy theories. And let's just be very clear, right? Let's go back to the beginning. Someone somehow found out about this author's about the website that the father of the alleged victim created. This didn't spontaneously jump into all of our brains. We didn't spontaneously know about the allegations and federal indictments against this guy. Literally, Bizarro Gate is called that because when the father of the alleged victim posted the link to his site about the alleged perpetrator, when he posted that to the Facebook page of BizarroCon, it was deleted. All right, that's Bizarro Gate. That's not a conspiracy theory. You can ask the father himself. He spoke to me personally. And told me that
he spoke to Brian personally, and I'm sure he said that as well.
And we have, he also, the father, confided in me that he posted the link in the Bizarro Fans Facebook page, and it was deleted, and he was banned from the group. Now, the administrator of that group has since publicly come forward after the alleged perpetrator attempted to post his defense blog in the Bizarro Fans group. The administrator deleted that too and said, look, this is no place for your personal fights.
Which is fair.
I don't want this stuff in here. I want this to be about Bizarro Fiction. Don't push this stuff in here. Now, that's fair to a point, but at the same time, it's like, if you guys are going to virtue signal to feminism and say, yes, all women, believe all women, then you can't be deleting links when members of your community are exposed as having...
But it's fair to keep, I mean, in a group, if somebody posts something in our Reading to Strangers group that's not part of Reading to Strangers or, you know, associated with that, I find it fair to delete. But if you're going to block one person because of it, you probably should have blocked the other person, which I doubt they're blocked, just to be fair. I mean, these forums are for what they want to talk about. I don't get into, you know, there's limited free speech in, a group like that. You know, you can't sit there and... talk about other shit or just promote your shit in there. And then sure. If you have rules, then you have community rules for those groups.
Sure.
But
we'll go with that. And that's fine. But again, it's just to gloss over the fact that someone deleted the link and tried to suppress this information from the Bizarro community. That's why I named this Bizarro Gate, because there was an attempt.
And I was just specifically talking about the Bizarro fans.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
Now, Eraserheads post or the Bizarro Cons post, those are a little different.
Well, but if they want to come out and say that, they haven't said anything. They, according to Brian's podcast, he received a communication from them saying that they're looking into it. That's cool, but to end this, well, then, there's other stuff I want to talk about too, like the female Bizarro author who said we should believe all women, and she was attacked by this author's friends.
Oh, yeah, she was talking about that.
She was called a social climber and really had her reputation...
Gaslighting, which is kind of like witch hunting.
whatever. I don't like those terms. Those are feminist terms, yeah. And those are SJW terms. And again, and I don't adhere to those principles, but this whole community pretends to. This community is led by a self-proclaimed feminist. And then the community is suppressing this information about someone,
Well, just, and allowing someone to... attack a female that has an opinion. I mean, that's what... I mean, we know that who is the figurehead that these people are following, that they're trying to gain favor with. If your subjects are attacking a female for just speaking against what the, community belief is, the person in charge needs to come down and correct those people.
Say anything. anything. Yeah. And that's one of my biggest criticisms about the powers that be in Portland is they don't ever say anything. They let their very vocal editors beneath them say whatever the fuck they want, however the fuck they want. There was a thread from 2 weeks ago where I was the biggest piece of shit in the world. Where he claimed that what I said was on this podcast, what I said was, I'm not scared of you because if we fought, I would beat your ass because you're a little 100-pound soaking wet dude with dirty hair and a denim jacket. That was then misinterpreted to be that I was physically threatening to beat this guy up, and then went on to be 100 comments of ridicule and just schoolyard bullying that, again, I just don't care.
It's just silliness, too. Yeah,
it's totally and then immature.
Anytime anybody said anything to the contrary, they're immediately shut down.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, come on. If you're going to have 78 comments be fuck this guy, and maybe only 5 saying, well, you know, let's just not say this, fuck this guy. Let those 5 stand. I mean, if it's a 50-50 fight, then you get involved and then you throw stuff in. But if people are bickering back and forth about somebody, just let them go. Even if it's your own shit, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
You're already fucking throwing them under the bus. Already have the majority of the tide. Why do you have to go and, you know, snipe anything that would say anything contrary to it?
So it just makes the powers that be look really shady when they allow their people that work directly under them to say whatever the fuck they want, however the fuck they want to, throwing shade in any direction they want to, and then they never come out and say and condemn that behavior. That is as good as endorsing. You might as well be endorsing that behavior. So, I mean, I really think that's all we have to say on the subject. I could go into more detail about how there was the first comment on Brian's. On Brian's transcript of his open letter to the Bizarro community is from the very guy, the very same author who was over on my website in my comments telling me they didn't need proof that the alleged harasser from BizarroCon didn't need to be arrested, didn't have to have the police called on him, didn't need charges filed against him, didn't need to be indicted for anything for them to excommunicate him, call him a creep, and say he shouldn't be allowed Bizarro women.
But
that very same author, that very same author then effortlessly pivots over the very first comment on Brian's open letter to the Bizarro community is him defending his buddy, who does have federal indictments against him, who only got off because of an 11-1 hung jury, who has, you know...
One was 10-2, but still.
You know, it's the hypocrisy there. That you know, I could sit and rub salt into that guy's wounds and call him the biggest fucking hypocrite on the face of the earth and tell him that he doesn't have the social skills or intelligence to even be on the internet, and that he's doing his entire community a disservice by posting any comments anywhere because he makes the whole Bizarro community look like fucking hypocritical fools. I could do all that, but Jeremy's been giving me the look for 15 minutes that he wants to end this show. So
I make a special one. We can still do what we had planned. Give him 2-for-1.
Now we're just gonna throw. You know, I don't know. I didn't mean to talk for an hour about this, but I hope that that de-escalated the issue. I hope that we paid respect to Brian and gave him his props properly.
Like I said, after what he did in his show Thursday, I'd be more than willing to add him to what I listen to on a weekly basis if I was actually not called the little monkey.
Right.
If he just pulled that back, there was one thing that kept him from gaining a new fan.
Right.
So,
That's that. So that's what everybody's been blowing up the site for. I could also go into talking about the new Kevin Strange conspiracy theory that I supposedly have a program that auto-refreshes my website. That
you don't think we'd be in the top fucking 100? Bullshit. If we did that toolbar, I know enough people that we could do it all at the same time that we could at least get in, you know, the 100,000, let alone.
I've posted screenshots of the amount of, you know, unique visitors. Apparently, I would have to have done this from 7,000 computers.
Let's see. If we were doing it from 7,000 computers, we'd be at least in the 100,000s.
I've posted screenshots.
Right under Amazon. Right under fucking Uber. Something like that.
I've posted screenshots that show that that visitors come from, you know, more than a dozen different countries around the world. I'd have to have refresher programs hitting computers from all over the world.
Well, and you've had that dude from India for at least 2 years. I remember the dude from India buying your books 2 years ago. And I was just like, what? India?
He's a big old fan. You know, it's just that kind of behavior makes all of Bizarro Fiction look bad. When these sycophants of Portland that are basically like, Portland can do no wrong. When we have to protect women, we'll say yes, all women. When we have to protect men, we'll call women liars. The whole grossness of it. And then when you throw mud at me, and they claim that when the guy was like, I have a Brian Keene book cover blurb, and I'm proud of it, and I don't use his name to gain fame. And I drop the bombshell on him that I actually have 2 Brian Keene book blurbs. I just don't use them.
You have a personal, not just for a book cover, but for your personal self, one from this open letter to Bizarro.
Yeah, in the open
letter. Kevin Strange is Bizarro. If we were trying to, monetize this whole thing, that's the first thing I'd do is chop that shit up. Yeah.
Kevin Strange is Bizarro, quote Brian Keene. And I don't use that stuff because, again, as I said earlier, I shut down the publisher, or I sold the publishing house, got rid of the publishing house. I don't use the book blurbs from famous authors because I want my fiction to stand on its own merits. And maybe in the end, that's what's going to be my downfall, is that I'm too honorable. And I'm too willing to let my stuff stand on its own merit. I don't suck the tits of any publisher. I'm not a sycophant to anyone. As you guys can see, Brian Keene's one of my idols, and I'm willing to go toe-to-toe and fight with that motherfucker when he pisses me off, because that's just how I live my life. My life is, I stand from my personal life to my art to my writing career to everything in my life is based on merit. And I treat other people based on merit, too. You're not going to be my friend just because someone else is your friend and they want me to be nice to you. Ain't going to be nice to you. If I could possibly move up a social ladder by being nice to someone that I don't like, I won't do it. And the same thing is true for my...
Us. Yeah. We've worked together. It wasn't the best way to end a working relationship. Yeah. We're still friends because of the other stuff.
Yeah, Jeremy and I ended up parting ways as business associates for a long time because we couldn't agree ideologically on the direction of the podcast. However, I want to note that Jeremy just wanted me to keep doing the podcast that I didn't. And that's, why we came back together is because, I never disagreed with him. I needed to stop at that moment, and it was a make or break for Jeremy, and that was fine. I didn't lose any respect for him for that at all. In fact, if I'm going to do business with somebody, I want somebody willing to tell me to go fuck myself. Well, if I'm not willing to take the business in a direction that they think is a profitable direction that's going to make us better, that's all Jeremy wanted to do, and that's why we're here today and we can work together again, because he only had the best intentions of the podcast, of the career, of my career, of the publishing house we had at the time. He was only doing he was doing the right thing, and I wanted to shut it down due to personal reasons. So, that's how I am. And that guy was throwing his shade, trying to, again, virtue signal to Brian Keene. I just shut him down from every angle, man, and they make themselves look stupider and stupider. My advice to you guys is write some fiction. I have a hundred...
Hone your craft.
I have 110,000 words worth of fiction coming out in the middle of doing 11 Reading to Strangers, plus my other two podcasts, Watching with Strangers and Ranting at Strangers, plus everything else I have going on in my life. And I'm able to get all this done because I don't sit on the computer and gossip on Facebook. I actually get the work done. And I suggest that everyone relax, calm down, go back to work, write some great books. And let's change the face of literature forever by creating a permanent category called Bizarro Fiction. We have to do it together. We have to work as a team. And I guess with that, we're going to do some fiction now, I guess. We're going to do...
I don't know. 2 hours later.
No, we're at an hour, and it's only 20 minutes. Right. It's a 20-minute thing. But we are going to...
Cut it off after it. Maybe
we are going to end it now. So after the second installment of McHumans, it will just end. We aren't coming back for any commentary. Stay tuned next week for part 3. And next week, I'm going to... I'm going to take it in a totally different direction. I just want to talk about McHumans. Next week's podcast, it's not going to be sexy. It's not going to be controversial.
We can be sexy.
It's not going to be controversial. If there is...
You body shaming me.
If there is something controversial that pops up, we will fucking record another special episode. Yes, we will. But the actual...
It's going to have to be big, though.
The actual Sunday morning podcast is going to just focus on... We're gonna move the direction towards just focusing on the fiction. And if this isn't... And if listening to serialized fiction isn't your bag, if you don't want to listen to our books, you know, have something cool to listen to while you drive to work... or while you're going to bed at night, or while you're working around the yard. If that's not something that you like, then I'm afraid you're not going to like this podcast. But if that's why, you know, if that's why you originally tuned in, then you'd be delighted to know that we're going to try to put this stuff behind us as best we can. Although I do have many, many, many more ammunition shells, and I can fight at any given moment if I'm asked to, if I'm called to arms by this community. I will fire up the fucking microphone again, and we will go right back to blows. That needs to be clear. But until then, I'm saying let's de-escalate this. Let's relax. Let's get this genre where it needs to be. So with that, gang, Jeremy, did you have anything else to add?
Just work on your craft, folks. Let's bring this all up. So science fiction was at this phase at one point, this small of a community.
Yeah.
We can easily top that because I'm at, or at least match that and bring it into the light because people like the bizarre and surreal. People like the insane and crazy. I mean, that's when we were growing up, it was the video section. I mean, from Toxic Avenger, you know, and on.
Eraserhead.
Yeah, there's just crazy stuff to watch. Though people want to read crazy stuff as well.
Yeah. So with that being said, we're now going to rejoin Ricky and Chef and the rest of the McHumans ragtag gang of survivors as they work their way deep into the sunken city of Relais.
Through some meat portals.
And they run into a bizarre ritual. I think that's in part two. We'll see. So yeah, thanks for listening. And remember, gang, keep reading. What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultiest of the cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks. Before long, we're turned around, deep inside the claustrophobic, damp walls of Relais. Guys, maybe we should turn back the other way. I think we missed a turn about 50 yards back, I say, scratching my neck with my free hand through the gaping dead mouth of the sniffer head sitting on top of my own. The thick exoskeleton is irritating my skin.
I thought you said you knew where we were going,
Ty says, red-faced, panting. He's starting to sweat a lot. He doesn't look healthy anymore.
This is a terrible idea. We're all gonna die down here.
I'm looking around at this point, trying to ignore the injured man's complaining, but he might be right. I can't tell if we're moving forward, backward, up, or down. I know the banquet hall resides in the deepest section of the Titan structure, but without Euclidean geometry, there's no telling which direction is actually down. For all I know, we're walking in circles, just waiting for some awful monster to stumble up and make us his evening meal. I never actually said I knew where we were going. I said I have it on good authority that the plug is at the bottom of Castle Relais. How exactly we get there? That's anybody's guess. Ty catches me off guard. My peripheral vision is filled with limp, dangling tentacles. He slams me against the wall and points his stinger in my face. The smell of the sniffer parts, both Ty's and my own, makes my eyes water. Karen and Chef look on, but don't do anything to stop the confrontation. They want us to sort this out on our own. When he talks, Ty's voice is strained, and his words are slightly slurred.
I'm not gonna fucking die for you, Ricky. I don't even fucking like you. You're a smug little shit. Why should any of us trust you anyway? We all watched you kill the only guy at McHumans that ever did like you.
Before I can respond, a scream from behind us, or maybe above us, breaks the tension in our group. A human scream. Ty stands rigid. I fix my sniffer helmet, which has shifted around in the scuffle. I attempt to walk away, hoping the next bend leads us to our destination, but Ty grabs my armor.
Wait, he says, as another scream rips through the stone hallway. Oh, I know that voice.
Still favoring his ever-swelling arm, he ducks through a passageway in the wall beside us.
I look at the others puzzled. I guess we should follow him. We all walk cautiously toward a weird faint glow much further down the corridor. Well, it seems further until we take 6 or 7 steps, and then we're right on top of the light source. It's some kind of room or chamber, the opening of which is a tall archway set with dozens of glowing green runes.
Hold up,
Chef whispers, his voice muffled by the enormous sniffer tentacles draping over his mouth.
We don't know what's in there. We can't be fucking around with no hero shit. We gotta get down to that banquet hall before those monsters get suspicious. Fishbowl's gonna come looking for our asses if we don't get moving.
Ty waves away Chef's warning, poking his head into the room. The rest of us hug the wall, waiting for his report. After a moment, he pulls his head back out of the room.
I knew it. Knew what, Cracker? Take a look for yourselves.
Karen looks first, then suppresses a small squeak. Chef chances a look around the corner next. Then he leans back and closes his eyes.
Fuck, he says. That ain't good.
What is it? Cautiously, I stick my head inside and gasp. The room isn't very big, maybe the size of the inside of a gas station with a ceiling twice as tall. In the center of the room stands 3 pillars on a slick, reflective black floor, so much so that the surface looks like black ice. Behind the pillars is another doorway with an equally ornate archway containing similar glowing green runes. The screams we heard no doubt originated from the 3 naked women tied to the pillars by their hands and feet. The cause of the screams is more than evident. 3 figures wearing hooded cloaks stand menacing the nude women at the base of the pillars. They are gathered around the westernmost pillar, and one of the hooded things splashes some sort of pink oil on the exposed breasts and chest of their captive. As her scream rings out again, the rest of my group poke their heads back into the room. She's an older black woman, heavy set. Her tits are surprisingly perky. Back in the real world, I would have totally fucked her, but we're not in the real world. We're at the bottom of the ocean, and this poor lady is tripping so hard, I wonder if she's going to break her restraints. She bucks and thrashes, but unfortunately for her, they hold fast. The woman strapped to the easternmost pillar screams and thrashes almost as much as the black lady. She's a brunette in her 20s, so-so looks. I wouldn't kick her out of bed, but I wouldn't look twice if I saw her in the grocery store. But Ty isn't paying attention to the black chick or the brunette. His eyes are focused on the thick girl tied to the middle pole. She's got wild, frizzy, curly red hair and tattoos that travel from wrist to wrist, connecting across her chest all the way down to her huge, drooping, pierced tits. Her eyes are closed, her head is down, as if she's trying to will herself away from the strange chamber.
Leslie,
he says. Chef pulls him back out of the room.
You know that fat bitch?
Ty glares at the big man.
Yeah, I do. Leslie and I were in the same group when they rounded us up and shoved us inside those leviathans. When they dragged us all down here to this hell, we were separated after a few days. I was sent off to McHumans. I thought they'd killed her. The last thing she said to me was that she'd find me, and that if we had to die down here, she wanted to die with me.
Well, that's touching, I say, but we've got to get to the banquet, so give your girlfriend one last look and let's fucking boogie. It don't look like she's getting out of this one, bub. Ty grinds his teeth. He looks like he's about to take a swing at me. I don't blame him. I know I'm an asshole, but seeing this thing through and making it to the banquet is more important to me than some cross-dressing weirdo's feelings. That's when the black lady explodes. The awful sound of her shrieking and wailing, accompanied by breaking bones and tearing flesh, causes us to drop to the floor and peek our heads back into the room once more. The poor woman looks as if a grenade has gone off between her tits. Her entire midsection is blown outward. Gnarled, jagged pieces of bone jut out at all angles. Internal organs hang from their pointed tips. Her life's blood and unidentifiable hunks and pieces of her insides pool at the base of the pillar to which she's tied.
Why the fuck are they blowing up women?
Karen whispers, wide eyes shocked with horror. And then we see why. The black lady's body begins to convulse, and the hooded figures cautiously back away. More crimson goo ejects from her massive wound as her limbs flop and flail against her bindings. Then a massive claw impossibly drags its way out of her torn chest, a claw the size of her entire body, followed by a pair of long, groping antennae. A monstrous, gibbering head with huge eyes and a mouthful of squirming teeth begins to push its way out of the wound, but a huge, bulky horn jutting from its forehead gets caught inside the lady's ribcage. It pushes, backs up, and pushes again, ramming the inside of her chest, causing her big perky tits to flop up and down, not unpleasantly, until the horn begins to poke through right between her sizable boobs, eventually ripping through the ribs, finally splitting her open, ruining once and for all her amazing rack.
The thing flops its way out of her body and lands at the base of the pillar, somehow more than 3 times the dead woman's size. The fuck? I say, barely able to keep my composure as the thing shakes the gore from its shark-like hide and scampers off through the opposite door. Several more horrors do the same, each far too large to fit inside the dimensions of the black woman's body, but slither and rip their way out nonetheless. They all follow the first monster through the passage opposite our own. What the fuck am I watching, I ask, ready to turn away and forget I ever saw this horrid ritual.
Some kind of portal, Chef says. They're using women's bodies to transport creatures here for the banquet from various other kingdoms at the bottom of the sea, I'm guessing.
Disgusting, Karen says, turning away, looking very pale and shaken. Yeah, I've seen enough. Let's get out of here, I add.
Not without Leslie,
Ty says, though his conviction has faltered considerably since eyeballing the huge beasts fighting their way out of the black woman's body. Oh no, I say, starting off back the way we'd come. Karen trails me like a love-struck shadow. I'm not here to play cavalry for some fat bitch. You want to be Captain Save-A-Ho, you be my guest. Come on, guys. We gotta find this fucking banquet before it's too late.
I expected as much from you, Ricky.
I stop and turn around. What's that supposed to mean?
We all watched you axe your best friend in the face. Why would I believe you'd risk your ass to save me, or Chef, or even little Karen there?
My face turns red inside my sniffer helmet.
Don't you question my loyalties, you cross-dressing sissy!
I cut myself off before I can say anything worse. Then, composing myself, I say, look, I have to find the plug so I can save all of us. I need you. I need everybody to make it to the banquet. I'm sorry about your friend. I truly am. But we have got to keep moving. Chef, come on. It's time to go.
No,
Chef says. I stare at him. Oh, for Christ's sake, why not?
You see the way them monsters are headed, white boy? Where you think they're going in such a hurry? Fuck my life!
I growl under my breath, stalking back up to the rest of the group, Karen in tow.
To the fucking banquet!
We've gotta go through there? Karen asks, suddenly looking even more pale. I look through the archway again.
There's no way we can sneak past those cloaked things. The room's just not big enough. How on earth do you propose we go through there? We don't go through, Chef says. We go up.
Chef goes first, demonstrating just how elastic the physics of Relay truly are. He plants one foot firmly against the wall in front of the archway and then falls backwards. Karen yelps, and I flinch forward on instinct, trying to catch him before he hits the ground, but he doesn't. Instead, he casually lifts his other leg and begins a vertical ascent up the wall. When he reaches the tall ceiling, he does the same thing until he's completely upside down, staring at us from above.
What you white people waiting for? Get your butts up here!
The rest of us climb the ceiling. The already surreal scene before us gets that much weirder from our new vantage point. Now, the cloaked figures and the helpless naked women are upside down above us, and we're climbing into the room as quietly as we can, hoping not to disturb the captors or the monsters they continue to unleash from inside the bodies of the captive women. We manage to sneak halfway across the room before everything goes to fuck. By the time we get to that point, the cloaked figures have splashed the strange liquid onto the mid-20s brunette strapped to the easternmost pillar, and more monsters have piled their way out of her torso, resembling a scene of corny clowns stumbling out of a tiny car. She's been torn open in such a way that her chest and naked tits are sitting parallel to her chin, almost like a sort of tray with boobs. Really gnarly stuff. But it's when the cloaked things move on to Ty's friend Leslie that our whole plan shits the bed. Having seen what happened to the other two women, she's really going nuts up there, upside down above our heads. There's maybe 25 feet separating the gore fest happening on the floor above and us crawling across the ceiling like cat burglars below. Cat burglars stuffed inside the carcasses of alien lobster scorpion monster thingies. By this point, the obsidian floor is thick with sloppy fluids and unidentifiable hunks of meat that have so recently belonged to the deceased women. The hooded figures, though, they don't slip on the muck. They glide across the surface, almost as though their feet don't touch the floor. Leslie thrashes against her restraints as the figures begin to chant and produce yet another vial of pink liquid. Ty is watching all of this from a crouched position, his head cranked back, staring straight up. He's in the lead, so it prevents the rest of us from moving forward.
Go!
I hiss, punching him in the ass cheek. Leslie wails again, and Ty stands up, still watching the events unfold above. Then he just jumps. He looks like fucking Superman as he leaps into the air and keeps going up. Relay doesn't give a shit about gravity, obviously.
Oh no!
Karen exclaims as Ty lands directly on top of the middle cloaked figure, knocking the pink liquid container from its hand, causing the weird stuff to explode onto the shiny black surface of the floor. No portal opens there. Flesh seems to be the key ingredient in its magic. Ty struggles to his feet. Now he's upside down like the rest of them. He takes a swing at the figure to his right, but misses. The figure to his left grabs him in a bear hug and holds him there, while the middle figure climbs to its feet. Ty is now officially fucked. Damn it! I yell, too loudly. The figures look up, down, whatever. They see us. Now we're fucked, too. Chef jumps first. Karen and I look at each other, worry painted on our faces behind the limp tentacles of our sniffer helmets. Then we jump. Now we're all right side up again, standing on the smooth black surface of the ritual chamber floor. Chef, Karen, and I stand facing the pillars containing the captive Leslie and her dead companions. The three cloaked figures stand with their backs to her, facing us. The middle one holds Ty with one arm and holds an open container of pink liquid above Ty's head with the other. No one moves for several beats. Even Leslie, who is wide-eyed and shocked at the sudden turn of events, has quieted down. Even at this close distance, less than 10 feet, I still can't make out the features of the cloaked figures. It's as though the cloth sucks the color out of reality. Not the color black, as much as the absence of anything. "What's the call here, Shep?" I ask, finally. He looks at me like I'm retarded, takes a deep breath and says,
"Oh, okay, all right. Look, just let the sissy white boy go, and, the fat bitch, too. Go ahead and let him go, and, oh, fuck it."
He whips out his star-shaped stone and barks a short chant. The liquid vial and the cloaked figure's gnarled gray hand explode in a pink mist, causing the figure to lose its grip on Ty long enough for him to swing around and plant his stinger-tipped arm gauntlet into the thing's chest. I take the opportunity to charge forward, focusing on the cloaked figure to the right, while Chef manages the one on the left. "Get the girl!" I yell to Karen, who limp gallops toward the pillars. Ty retracts his stinger and looks at it in disbelief.
"No blood?"
But before he can comment further, the cloaked figure extends its arm and bellows a quick chant, sending Ty sprawling across the black floor, armor smoking. Chef takes a more direct approach. Using his enormous hand, he grips the cloaked figure up by its head and puts the starstone right up against it. He says a few quick words, and the thing's head turns to dust in his hands. It drops to the floor but lands standing. A thick gray tendril resembling the trunk of an elephant sprouts from the neck of the cloak.
"What the?"
Chef starts. The figure's hands dart out, grabbing Chef by his massive shoulders. The tendril wraps around the black man's thick neck.
"Crackers!"
he says, starting to choke already.
A little help here!"
I fare no better. I try a slashing attack, but the figure in front of me easily parries. I spin around and manage to grab it around the head in a shitty schoolyard headlock. I stab at its body with my stinger arm, but like Ty, I have no luck drawing even so much as a gasp from the thing. It's when I drag it to the ground and pull the cloak away that I finally understand why. It's a woman. A dead woman. Just like those strapped to the pillars. What's animating the corpse is a series of gray tendrils coiled around its limbs and weaving in and out of its exposed wounds. All the tendrils converge onto one thick root that sticks up from the black floor. The cloaked figures are corpse puppets. But if the tentacles are rooted to the floor, how are the corpse puppets moving around? I don't have time to investigate the question further. The rotted thing tosses me aside and pulls itself upright. The corpse's feet don't even touch the ground. The legs are all pulled up and useless, while the thick tentacle sways back and forth. A jar of pink liquid rolls away from its discarded robes. I grab it and quickly tuck it inside my sniffer armor. Then I stand, facing the dead woman all run through with tendrils as though she's caught on some twisted tree branch. I lunge at it again, but it knocks my blow away and grabs me by the throat, lifting me off the ground. The tip of a tendril slithers through one of the dead woman's eye sockets, wiggling at me in mockery while I choke for breath. I'm fairly sure it's about to break my neck, but then it surges forward and slams me hard into something. This does not help my ability to breathe. Gasping, heart pounding, begging for air, I'm able to kick the corpse puppet away. I take in huge breaths, craning my neck around to see what's poking me in the back. It's the black chick. Her exploded ribs are digging into mine through small spaces in my armor. I pull myself free just as the corpse puppet renews its aggression. I turn, hoping my armor will absorb the impact of the creature's rushing attack. It does. But the force of the blow throws me forward, and somehow, some way, I end up ramming head first right inside the black lady's open chest. At first, I don't realize what's going on. I open my eyes and I no longer see the corpse puppet. I don't see my friends or any of the other cloaked corpses either. I'm staring at an empty room. It's not exactly like the one I should be in, but it's another ritual chamber for sure. That's when I hear shrieking. I feel hands behind my head pushing me down. I think it's the corpse puppet. I struggle to turn around, which is difficult considering I'm inside the armor of a dead bug. I prepare to attack, but when I finally get turned around, facing towards the ceiling, I realize something is very wrong. Instead of the grotesque face of the corpse puppet, I'm looking at a very alive woman. She's pushing and yanking on me and screaming in agony. It's when I look down that I realize why. I'm sticking out of her stomach. The corpse puppet has thrown me through the black lady into another room inside another castle in another part of the ocean. I'm stuck halfway through a fucking dimensional portal made of flesh. Stop it! Stop it! I say, trying to calm the woman as she yanks at my sniffer helmet's face tentacles and beats at my chest plate. I quickly realize it won't do any good to talk to her. She's clearly lost her mind. Who wouldn't? She's had horrible monsters crawling through her abdomen for the better part of an hour. At least the corpse puppets had the decency to kill their captives before using them as flesh tunnels. What kind of savage thing would purposely keep this woman alive to suffer through all the pain and agony of being a flesh tunnel? That question is answered when a deep thudding begins just outside the ritual chamber archway. The woman seizes up, stops struggling. Her eyes go wide. Her already pale flesh becomes nearly translucent from fear. I lean my head back to see what she's so afraid of. Oh, fuck. The creature standing just outside the archway has to duck to fit inside. It's huge, reptilian, yet bipedal. It looks like what would happen if Leatherface and a giant troll gang-raped a dinosaur. It's wearing a crimson leather apron that's big enough to cover an extended cab pickup truck. It has little black beady eyes and a snout with two little slits for nostrils. Its smooth, lipless mouth is covered in unidentifiable brown meat, suggesting it has only just finished its lunchtime meal. In its two huge arms, it carries more nude-bound women. It drops them into a small cage on the far side of the chamber, pushing them down and closing the lid against their flailing, screaming protests as easily as a toddler putting away his toys. That's about all the time I have before it sees me. A grown man wearing dead bug armor, sticking halfway out of a dying woman's stomach, isn't easy to miss. The thing hisses, its tongue darting out 5 feet or more, and picks up some kind of club from next to the cage of women. As if that isn't bad enough, I feel my lower body being pushed from the other side of the portal. I assume it's the corpse puppet trying to jam my legs the rest of the way through the dead black lady's chest. I hear splashing and screaming coming from that side. It sounds like water in a pool sloshing around. I don't have any more time to consider what the hell is going on over there or how my friends are faring against the corpse puppets because the huge dinosaur dude in here comes charging across the room, and all the while, the chick I'm stuck inside of is clawing and yanking at me. I'm pretty sure this is it for me. If Dino Man doesn't kill me, the corpse puppet on the other side will, and that's if this chick doesn't manage to break my neck first. Only at the last possible second do I realize I still have a jar of pink liquid under my armor. I reach inside and get 2 fingers on it, but I'm so cramped up I can't get the rest of my hand around it. My heart is racing and I just keep screaming, "Oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck," as the dinosaur thing covers the distance between us, pulls back its club like a baseball bat, and swings for the fences. I close my eyes, desperately hoping that maybe my armor will save me, when I feel a sickening thud right above me and I suddenly have more than enough room to grab hold of the pink vial. I open my eyes and look up. I'm no longer stuck inside the stomach of the woman. I'm not stuck because the dino creature has smashed her upper body into pulp with one swing, splitting her torso basically down the middle, leaving me plenty of room to pull out my jar of liquid, which I do as quickly as I can. The reptile beast lifts its club to smash down again, but I unscrew the cap and throw the liquid onto its face before it can finish its attack. Instantly, the horror's face rips in half as a slimy, webbed claw tears its way through, killing the beastie before its huge body can even hit the floor. Not waiting around to see what shade of awful this new monster will be, I kick the corpse puppet off my legs and pull my way back through the black lady, making sure to grab hold of the mangled woman's upper torso on the way back to the original ritual chamber, using her body to plug the hole and prevent the new horror from making its way over to this side. My relief lasts all of 2 seconds before I see the source of the splashing water I'd heard from the other side. "I can't catch a fucking break," I mumble as I gaze into the 3 faces of a giant black octopus monster. The black floor has somehow turned into black water, and the octopus, easily the size of a school bus, juts up out of it, a stark gray contrasting the inky water. The faces on each side of its huge head have one seriously evil-looking red eye, and the middle face only has one, albeit even more evil-looking than the other two combined, making the whole thing really trippy to look at. It's got 3 separate mouths, all of them screaming different obscenities at my friends, who are now all caught up in its tentacles, which have discarded their meat puppets. Chef, on the far side, Karen in the middle, and Ty closest to me, all of them stabbing and clawing at the constricting tentacles, but all held fast. Chef looks at me, terror etched onto his painted face.
It's a trap! Get out of here, white boy!
I turn around to do just that when another voice stops me in my tracks.
Get me off this fucking post!
Leslie. She's still tied up. I rush up to her and slash her bindings away with my sniffer stinger. It's okay, I've got you. Now let's get out of... Before I can finish my thought, she pulls my stinger gauntlet off my arm and runs, totally naked, toward the black water. She screams a battle cry so deep and ferocious it would impress a whole battalion of men at war. She leaps right into the waist-high water and lunges toward the octopus, slamming the stinger into its crazy middle eyeball, causing the beast to shriek and fling my friends across the room. Torrents of bright blue ichor squirt into the air as Leslie climbs up its open mouth and continues to stab at it. As the octopus sinks below the inky water, Leslie doesn't stop stabbing, even after the monster is completely submerged. Her arm comes up again and again, plunging back down into the blackness until the water hardens again mid-stab, turning the inky lake back into the shiny basalt surface we'd witnessed upon entering the chamber. The only trace that there had ever been an octopus, or that the floor had ever liquefied, is Leslie's arm, still jutting up from the middle of the smooth surface. Her body has disappeared, along with the awful monster she'd sacrificed herself to kill. We're all quiet for several moments, each taking in the terrible thing that's just happened to us in our own way, still lying on the chamber floor where the octopus monster flung us, until Ty's wet coughing breaks our silence. I stir, walking over to the cross-dressing man crumpled in a heap next to the wall. I'm sorry, Ty. I don't...
Fuck off!
He says, slowly climbing to his feet. He marches across the onyx floor, pausing briefly as another round of coughing racks his body until he spits out a glob of coagulated blood. He kneels down next to Leslie's arm. He lets his hand rest on her fingers, still in their death grip. I walk up behind him, leaving him enough space to grieve.
She said... If she had to die, she wanted to die with me.
With some effort, he pries her fingers off the stinger gauntlet, pulling the weapon free. He lets the dead fingers close back around his hand, and he cries. After a while, he stands, turns to me, and slaps the stinger against my chest plate.
You're gonna need that.
He looks me in the eyes. His own are bloodshot. His face is puffy, and I can see the veins throbbing in his neck down across his injured arm and shoulder. His wound looks infected through the armor.
You're gonna need it when I get you to that fucking banquet hall. And even if it's the last thing you do before you die, I want you to shove it right up Cthulhu's ass.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.